Hey, Drew.
Hey, Mark.
Who do you think is the best-selling Canadian musician of all time? Or band. Or band.
I guess Celine Dion.
Yes. Celine Dion is the best-selling Canadian artist of all time.
How could it not be? She's a treasure.
She is a treasure. And actually, sort of a weird sort of segue is, it's really trying. She's going through a really hard time. She's got, you know what she was recently diagnosed with?
I do. I almost don't even want to say it because I'm going to get it wrong, but it's something.
It's called stiff person syndrome.
I don't understand what that is, but it does not sound fun.
It's an autoimmune disease, and your body just sort of starts having really awful contractions and spasms that is apparently incredibly painful and just sort of deteriorates you over time, which is really apparently also, by the way, super rare, which is not what we're here to talk about today. We are here to talk about Canadian musicians. I'm delighted that you recognize Celine Dion as the queen that she is. Her heart will always go on. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about one of the other great Canadian bands and musicians that exist out there, Rush.
Ah, yes. Probably my favorite Canadian.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, over Bare Naked Ladies?
Yes, I've seen both in concert, actually.
Wow, really? At the same show?
No.
Was it in Canada? That's maybe the most important question.
No, both were here in Salt Lake City. But yeah, the Rush concert was, I think...
And was that with the all three of them?
Yes. So this was back when they were all still alive and touring. And
Pre-Neil Peart. Dying. You know, we should address that elephant in the room first.
Okay.
There is like not real debate. Apparently he always says Neil Peart.
Really?
Yeah. And everyone else just says Neil Peart.
Well, now I feel like an asshole.
I am sort of a Neil Peart proponent, for whatever that's worth.
Sure.
Because saying Peart feels a little bit like I'm being pretentious, in the same way that people say encyclopedia instead of encyclopedia.
Does he spell it?
Yeah, it's P-E-A-R-T.
Oh, I thought it was going to be P.
Like ligature or whatever that's called.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, he does. He does.
Yeah, I think.
So what we're actually here to do is what we do every week is... Every week, however often these things are being released.
Whenever we do it.
Yeah, you're the one in charge of that. So in my head, they're just constant flood of content. We're here to talk about what we always talk about, which is pinball.
That's great.
Our discovery for the good, the bad, the mediocre that's out there as our amateur enthusiasm continues to spread. And today we're talking about the 2022 pinball machine named Rush.
That sounds like a great idea.
Yes. And it is, it's not just like a weird naming coincidence. They have the licensing and partnership with the band. And so this machine is really, I think, for Rush aficionados. It lets you select Rush tracks when you start the game. And actually every ball you get to choose whether you want to keep listening to Fly By Night or you want to go over and listen to Tom Sawyer or whatever the case might be. And it's got a bunch of like nuggets in the play field and in the way that the machine is designed to really lean into the band. So the main central element, and because we're talking about a new machine, it's probably worth mentioning a lot of these new machines have what I would call really open sort of lower play fields. The ball has a lot of freedom to go to different spaces. Okay. And this Rush machine is really no different, but there's a lot of different paths the ball can take in the upper play field, like loops and ramps and all sorts of fun things. In the Rush machine, there is one central element in the top center, and it is a time machine. So there's...
I love it.
Do you know why it's there? It's not just like, wow, Rush has been around forever. Let's go back through the ages.
Yeah, I will admit, I'm a fan of Rush musically, but I don't know that I've ever really gotten into the Rush cinematic universe to know the lore behind the time machine.
Yeah,
I'm eager to hear.
So canonically in the RCU, no, they had a tour in the early 2010s.
Okay,
that was called the Time Machine Tour.
Yeah,
and I think presumably that tour was about celebration of Rush's career and everything they've been through. And so that is a central element of this machine. And part of it, Stearns, the manufacturer of the machine, part of their PR around it is about, you know, using this time machine to really journey through the ages and sort of phases of Rush.
And there is a lot to journey through. I mean, yeah. How long was Rush, you know, around for? I want to say they came out in the 70s and were still touring, you know, probably up till right about when this machine came out.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think they've been around since, when did Nero burn Rome? I think it was around 1968 is officially when they got started.
Okay. Yeah, I would have put it later, but that's amazing.
Yeah, so, I mean, gosh, what is that? 60-ish years almost. Just shy of that, I guess. 50 some years,
yeah.
And so, yeah, and what's sort of interesting is, of course, part of the modern machine, right? In the backboard, there is like an actual LED kind of screen that can show concert footage. And so you get to see the different flavors of Rush as you're playing the game and as you're kind of journeying with them through the different ages.
That's great.
One other thing that's, I think, really interesting about this machine that we should talk about before I talk about any kind of major callouts before we go play it is one thing that Stern has said that they're doing. This machine came out after Neil Peart died. And so they had committed some amount of proceeds from sales of this pinball machine to go to Neil Peart's charity foundation. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what that charity foundation does, but I think it's not a thing you see super often that, like, not only are we making this machine to celebrate this really kind of prolific and impressive band, but we're helping support a cause for this great musician and the cause that he believed in. I think that's kind of,
yeah, that's really great. I think that's great that they're in a position to still make money and give back to the community, and
yeah, and I'm
just very heartwarming.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not trying to make this suddenly Mark pitches why people should buy a pinball machine for the charity, but it is actually, it's something that sort of struck me when I was looking into this machine a little bit.
That's great.
So let's talk a little bit about the things to look out for when we go play it. So the time machine, I think, is the central element. That's how you're going to launch different objectives. And each of the objectives, it appears, I think, are related to different songs.
Can I just say that's one of my favorite things on a pinball machine is when there's like a very clear thing to bash and hit.
Yeah, like go here.
Like it's pretty clear that like good things are going to happen if you hit this big ramp with a time machine on it.
Yeah. There is also... There's in what I would call typical modern Stern machines, it looks like, you know, there's like the two orbits, which the ball stays on the play field and it kind of goes around. Those are going to be there. And then there are a couple of ramps to hit, one of which looks like the ball's just going to shoot back out at you. The ramp on the right, the ball goes in and it looks like the ball's just going to spit right back out. I'm not really sure how that works, but I'm excited to find out.
All right.
And also, I think the things to watch out for are going to be, how much are we jamming to the Rush music? How old does that get old? And I'm looking at a picture of the artwork, man. And the this is not the Rush that I remember. They have this really long, lustrous hair, and they're like cartoonified. And that is not how I remember Geddy Lee looking.
Well, to your
Neil Peart.
To your point, Rush exists across eons, practically, right?
Yeah.
And that was the fashion for probably a good decade of their career.
Yeah, that, you know, and that's a good point. Is there anything else that you want to know about this thing before we dive in?
No, let's get to it.
A Monday warrior. All right. How'd that go for you?
Not as well as I had hoped, but I enjoyed it. I'll admit it's tough playing a new machine.
Yes, yeah. So had you seen or played this one? But like we talked Fishtails last time,
yeah.
And I think we both had said we had seen and played that machine.
Yeah,
before.
I had seen this machine. I think once in the wild. I don't think I understand it yet. I don't think I have a good grasp on it. But that's okay. It was fun.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's, I agree with you. I think maybe I've played this once before. Yes, in Louisville, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And it's worth calling out that modern machines, especially from Stern, kind of come in different flavors.
Oh, yeah.
And those flavors are called Pro, Premium, and Limited. And really the main difference is that Pro sometimes doesn't have all of the bells and whistles and features that Premium or Limited do. My understanding is Premium and Limited are sort of how the pinball designer wanted the game to be, barring no cost. And that the Pro version is, this is how you can play the heart and soul of the game on a slightly more manageable budget.
Yeah, I've heard that even for some machines, they have a tier even below that that is smaller and has even fewer features, but still much of the same theming. But they stopped doing that after like one or two runs.
Oh, really?
Because they were just not, they were not popular with the enthusiast crowd. So
yeah, and it's interesting to think about who's buying pinball machines. I guess, like, you know, bars, arcades, and then Rush super fans.
Yeah, they call the smallest one the home edition. But I guess if you're buying a pinball machine for your home, you probably want the real McCoy.
Yeah, you want the actual. So it's worth calling out that we played the Pro Edition, which is the more affordable version of the machine. So if there are any features or things in a premium or a limited edition, we're not aware of it because that's not what our experience just was. Right. As always, our goal here is to look at pinball machines through sort of our hobbyist amateur eyes and assess them on three kind of major criteria: the game design, how playable is it for someone of our sort of enthusiast, hobbyist, amateur skill set, the theme, how well does the theme work in terms of linking play, and fun, which I think is honestly the only reason anyone's playing pinball is to have a good time. And so it's the question there as well, you know, how fun is it? Would we come back and play it? Would it belong in our home collection if such a thing were to exist? As we go down some of those, I do want to, I guess, give one other shout out that I forgot to do before we left to go play the game, which is we should probably at least mention who's behind this game. This game is designed by a guy named John Bork, and John has done a large number of other pinball machines throughout the ages, really. He's done a number of other band machines, like musicians and groups, but he's also done, you know, things like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which came out in 2020, and he's done stuff like back in the 90s. He did a Twister machine. He did the Austin Powers machine, which I think is amazing.
That's great. I do want to know how these prolific pinball designers get that gig and I guess hold on to it, right?
Like, yeah, like
that's great.
Yeah, it would be I want a tour of this guy's life because that sounds really cool. So it's I think probably just worth calling out, you know, if we're talking about the machine and we've got some feedback on game designs and themes, John, you got to listen up, man.
I'm sure he's listening.
Yeah, listen to your amateur audience.
Yeah, we've got some notes. That's all I'm going to say.
All right, let's get into it. So let's talk game design, right? So we mentioned the time machine before we left being sort of the central element. There are sort of two orbits. There are a couple of ramps. And then the rest of the play field is more or less open. In the bottom section, there are some drop targets with, like, you know, there's a guitar and a bass and drumsticks. And if you hit those, there's like another like little place for the ball to get like caught. I found that shot really, really hard. Interestingly, I thought this game had a lot of interesting design that was both shots that felt impossible. The left ramp, for whatever reason, for me today, couldn't hit it. Like, yeah. I think if you gave me 100 tries, I would hit it 10 times.
Yeah, for me, I had a similar experience on the left orbit. For whatever reason, I felt like it was just really tight. Like, I couldn't squeeze it in there. I don't know.
Yeah, and a lot of this, too, could come down to, you know, we spend a number of plays before just getting a feel for the machine. And then we say, all right, we're going to do our competition. That's how this one went today. And I felt like even trying to warm up, like, I don't know if it's the machine or I'm just not feeling it today or whatever the case was. It was tough. It was tough to kind of get in a groove.
Yeah. That's how that goes sometimes.
I thought as far as game design goes, there was a lot of cool, unique shots. So right next to the time machine, there was this sort of, I jotted it down as a mini orbit. There was sort of, you kick this ball into this like little loop and it sort of just whips back around and comes right back out towards the right side of the machine.
And do you like that?
I thought it was cool. I thought it was a cool mechanic. There was one mode that I unlocked where like that was a shot you needed to hit, and it felt satisfying that I could get it fairly reliably. And I haven't seen that before. So for me, that's that sort of unique element felt fresh.
The mini orbit.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I've seen that before. I will say for me, the unique element that I really enjoyed and felt very satisfying to me was on the other side of the time machine. There's kind of this, I called it a cave shot or something. I don't know. You kind of like have to kind of pop back in there and then it pops it back out at you, I feel like.
Yeah, that like, so when we were talking about it before we left, that looked like the right ramp shot, right? Like it sort of goes up and shoots back out and it goes into this cave and comes right back out at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. There was the other thing that I thought was interesting is we've seen double scoops before, right? A scoop is a ball goes into a hole and then sort of just pops back out at you.
Yeah.
And we've seen double scoops where usually it's done, you can enter the scoop from above or below. This one had an L-shaped double scoop, which I thought was really kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Like you could enter it from below and then, I think it's still kicked out down. But I don't think I've ever seen that either. And I thought, that's kind of interesting design.
It's amazing the kind of new mechanical things you can do with that little ball. And people come up with.
Yeah. Why do you think that? Do you think that's like a modern engineering feat that like someone in the 90s and 80s and like why weren't they there then?
Man, it can't be like we didn't have the technology. I feel like probably it was just maybe too expensive. You know, if they're going to make, three new pinball machines a year, they're going to be using kind of off the shelf components. And so every game probably has the same scoops, the same, whatever, same everything. But if you're coming out with, maybe one machine or two machines a year, you can really customize everything on it. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. And maybe it's just because generally, right? Like the only way you're hitting the T part of the L, the top part of the L is from the upper flipper. Right. You're kicking it over into it and then mm-hmm. it's coming down. And maybe it's just not worth the time for a lot of designers because it's not like a popular shot, or maybe that's not, I've got to imagine game designers are mostly catering design choices to what I'll call, I guess, the whales of pinball, which are like that's what I'm going to call the really good players who are buying machines and investing tons of time into it to be the best players of all time.
Yeah, I think now, certainly.
And I wonder, maybe those shots aren't appealing to them.
Yeah, I think that dynamic maybe wasn't there 30 years ago when they're catering more toward the owner operators who are trying to just milk quarters out of people.
Yeah, I think about, do you ever see Wayne's World?
Yeah.
Speaking of, it's appropriate for Rush, I think. In the first movie, right, when the owner, I don't even remember why he's talking. He's talking to Rob Lowe or Wayne or somebody about how he owns an arcade mm-hmm. and how he just sees kids pumping in quarters as just suckers to like give him money. And he's clearly not like a good guy in that movie. But yeah, I think that's to your point. That's probably like what the old designs were sort of focused on while the business was surviving. I don't know. But like the 90s was sort of the golden age.
So. 90s was the golden age and there was kind of a lull. I want to go on the record, by the way, and say that I don't believe that arcade operators are evil and like, milking money out of people.
Not anymore. I can't speak to owner operators sure. in the 80s and 90s when Wayne's World was sending them up.
Yeah, I guess all that to say I've become a pretty firm believer in paying for amusement and paying for pinball, especially. I've really found I enjoy visiting a place where I can pay for pinball, and that includes cover charges or a bar where you can just play a couple games or whatever.
You've converted me to that line of thinking, by the way, because I always thought like, well, and before I knew you really and like started to learn about pinball, it felt like a waste of money, right? Because mm-hmm. you put in the quarters and like you drain three times and you're like, cool, there goes a buck. But it turns out once you understand that like the game is serving a purpose and like there are objectives and goals, like, yeah, $10 can take you pretty far. That can get you, 40 minutes of gameplay or something.
Oh yeah.
Which is, would I pay $10 to go waste an hour somewhere? Sure. I do that all the time.
Yeah.
And so like it's an excellent point. And I think especially in like this modern like resurgence of pinball, the value is definitely there.
All that to say, go pay for some pinball today. That's my message to the audience.
Yeah, I'm glad Drew's standing up for the little guy, the arcade owner operators.
Well, you know, it's not an easy business to be in, I'm sure. I think they could use our support.
I am certain that you've done this. Have you done the math on how many games of pinball it would take to just say, I should have bought that machine?
I mean, going rate is like a buck a game, right? So it's a lot. It's thousands, right?
Well, what do they say? It's like 10,000 hours to become an expert at something. And so you multiply that, and maybe it's worth it then if you wanted to be an expert.
Yeah.
Anyways, all of that to say, I have one other big thought, I think, on Rush, and it's about that scoop. The scoop reliably would shoot down onto the right flipper, bounce the ball to the left flipper, and just set you up for this beautiful shot into what you're calling the cave, or the right ramp. Or the right, or anything on the right side of the playfield, and I found it immensely satisfying while playing the game that it felt really fair. I've played games where maybe it's not tuned right, but like where you hit a scoop or you hit a certain shot, and it just feels like you're insta draining. And this table felt super fair.
Yeah, I think that's going to be part of it's the design of the machine, but a lot of it really is the maintenance and kind of tuning of individual components by the operator. And I think you're right. They did a really good job maintaining that machine, because on another machine that might just go right down the middle.
Yeah. Do you have any other big notes on game design before we give some scores?
Yeah, I think, like you mentioned, it's a very open playfield, but it still manages to feel like there's a lot kind of going on, a lot of stuff to shoot at, even though it's not particularly crowded. The only, you know, maybe negative that I would see is that it feels pretty similar to a lot of these kind of modern pinball machines. It feels like, you know, you mentioned two ramps, two orbits, a scoop, some drop targets, and like a big thing in the middle to hit. And like, you know, you can move those components around. You can kind of shift things a little bit. But at some point, it does feel like, you know, a lot like other machines, I feel like.
Yeah, like that. If the time machine is the hook, like on the unique factor, it's not standing alone to the degree to...
So, yeah, all that to say, it was a very satisfying machine to play, but I don't know that there was a lot that makes it particularly unique and compelling from a gameplay standpoint.
Yeah, that's fair. I have one... We've talked about a lot of things. Like, there's one thing that I just don't understand from a game design point of view here, is there was a shot that if you hit on the right side of the playfield, and I think it was when the right flipper was up, although I'm not 100% sure, but there was a way for the ball to just fall back down into the plunger chute, like where the ball gets plunged from.
Yeah, I want to say it's through that upper flipper.
That's right? That's what I recalled, but sometimes it's hard to remember in the heat of play. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand that design choice. Like, it's in some places where it comes back down, like that chute where like it plunges out, like there's like another side, you know, ramp that it'll slide down and then back onto the right flipper. Uh-huh. This like literally just fell down back onto the plunger and I had to replunge it. And I thought, well, that's weird.
Yeah, I guess it could be like a little like one way kind of gate that swings only one way to let it out, but not back in. Or it could just be a wall there, right?
Yeah.
There must be a reason.
Yeah, and maybe it's something like deep into gameplay. It's
like a secret skill shot or something. Yeah, right? Get it back in the plunger.
Maybe there's something there that we just didn't see, but it felt really strange. And that was like the one kind of critique that I thought while I was playing, I was sort of taking away a little bit from the flow of the game.
Okay.
That said, though,
sure.
You ready for scores?
Yeah.
I think it's a four stars out of five. I think the game design is. While it's, like you said, it's missing some unique factors, but there is something really zen about it. It feels very fair, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, it's subjective experience, subjective scores, and I did not have as good of an experience, I guess, as you did. I docked him a couple points, gave him 3 out of 5. I felt like the gameplay was kind of vanilla, and I didn't get into the flow.
I'm so curious what's going to take us down into, like, 2 and 1 territory.
I think that's, you know, pinball museum territory playing from the 30s or something.
Where like, just something really,
God bless them, they were trying.
Really bad. All right, so let's talk then, let's talk theme. So in terms of theme, this, I'm thinking generally about, you know, how does the Rush branding really elevate the gameplay. And I'm not a Rush super. Like, I enjoy Rush. Fly By Night is one of my favorite songs.
Sure.
And but I'm not a super fan. So, you know, for me, it looks like there's a lot of good nods to Rush and their career, like the Time Machine tour and, you know, seeing the tour footage on like the sort of TV screen that's up there. Nods to their instruments, the different objectives. There's like Red Barchetta or whatever, which is one of their songs.
Yeah.
It's like one of the game modes. Like, it's cool. Like, it's nice that they're doing nods.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like the modes were songs, but also you could pick a song at the start.
That's correct. Each ball, you had a chance to choose between a good handful of songs.
Yeah.
And I feel like they were all bangers, too.
Of course, yeah. And I think that's one thing I actually appreciate is that a lot of these rock pinballs, you either have to just pick a song and it has no bearing on the gameplay, or you don't get to pick a song and it only comes up when you get the mode. And I really liked that you can pick your song, but also some songs are kind of like tied to the gameplay.
That's right. And it does change, like when you unlock those modes, right? It changes the track to that song.
Yeah.
And then when that mode finishes, assuming you haven't trained yet, you get back to your tune.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, agreed.
I like that. That was really cool. I was a fan of the art, I gotta say. I like that it wasn't just like a photorealistic picture or even just like super stylized. It was just kind of like a cool cartoon. It's great like pinball style art.
Yes, agreed with that, 100%. And I think the art also leans into, like, if you look at the Rush font, that like sort of, I don't know, stylized way that they spell Rush.
Yeah.
The art feels very in line with that, which is important, right? Like, it feels like it's true to the band's identity without being like, here's a stock photo of the band,
yeah.
Like in the center of the playfield. That said, you know, it's interesting too, because the location we played at was pretty loud, so I couldn't, and they didn't have the volume like cranked, so like I didn't really get to enjoy listening to, like, Fly By Night is a track you can pick, and I didn't get to like rock out to it.
Yeah,
you know? And I wonder if that would have
that's not the machine's fault though.
No, it's not the machine's fault, but like for my assessment of it, it makes it a little bit tough to say. Like, I like that the music's there, but I really, like, I would love to just have been like rocking out. I think, you know, Rush fans would probably lose their minds over this. Like, it looks like there's just so much thought and detail and care that went into it. But your sort of casual goer, pinball player, sees it at a bar and like, yeah, I'll check it out. I don't think this is like winning anyone over.
No, I think you got to be into Rush to really be into it. And that makes me think of another question I got. Who was it that said, you know you've made it as a musician when Weird Al, like, parodies you? Someone said that.
I feel like Kurt Cobain said something like that.
That might be, yeah, it might be Kurt Cobain. Oh, gosh, now I'm going to feel really bad about what I'm going to say next. I was going to say, you haven't really made it until you got a pinball machine, right? And
yeah, I don't Nirvana know if, doesn't, I don't think there doesn't is a Nirvana. Have one.
Although, I don't think it's because they are not popular enough. I think probably they just don't do that kind of stuff.
There is also probably something to, I mean, Dave Grohl presumably would give okay because there's a Foo Fighters machine.
Right.
Chris Novoselic isn't really in the band's face anymore, but presumably, I wonder if it's tied up somewhere in Cobain's estate.
I think that's almost certainly why. So no, you know, no aspersions against Nirvana, but you got to have a pinball machine.
That actually brings up an interesting question that I had for you, which is, you know, last week we talked about what would be a non-themed, you know, machine that you would create if you could. This time I wanted to ask you, you know, what if money and permissions issues were no object, like what band deserves a pinball machine that doesn't have one or that at least you haven't seen?
Okay. Yeah. I can't claim to know for sure, but I don't know. I could get behind a Billy Joel pinball machine. A little piano man, a little.
Imagine you've seen Big, the Tom Hanks movie. Uh-huh. Imagine some sort of like Big version of like a piano keyboard in the playfield that the ball could hit and trigger different piano notes or modes or something.
Yeah. I think the modes are, there'd be plenty of, like, we could do a We Didn't Start the Fire mode where the whole goal is just to keep the ball in play for the length of the song. And if you do, you know, multi-ball.
Yeah, like, sure.
Easy.
Moving out, you've got to eject the balls from the game. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yep. It's a new mechanic. No one's ever seen it before.
Do you have a band?
Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, Bare Naked Ladies does sort of come to mind. For a couple of reasons. One, you mentioned them at the top of this episode. And two, actually, one of the members of Bare Naked Ladies was involved in the making of this Rush machine, which I thought was really interesting.
Really? How?
I think just like consulting and doing some of the call outs and stuff because Geddy Lee and the other guy,
Alex Lifeson.
Thank you. The non Neil Peart guy.
One of the top like guitar players.
Yeah, you know, they're all like top of their craft. Like,
and nobody remembers it.
No, it's, yeah, because no you're respect. Sitting next to Geddy Lee
That's
and Neil
true.
Peart. Like,
That's true.
What are you going to do? I think he was involved in doing some of the consulting and maybe some of the call out work because he's mentioned in the like the marketing materials from Stern.
So like he does the call outs in the game or he's just
super unclear.
I wish you would make a call out for that shot.
Pretend I'm Neil Peart. I'm trying to call this out. I think he's sort of filling that space for Neil.
Okay. That,
but I don't know for certain other than that he is referenced in it. He is involved in the making and consulting of it as referenced in the marketing material. And Bare Naked Ladies, also like a super prolific band.
Yeah.
They've gone through some iterations, which is a little tough because, you know, the original guy who's doing like most of the rapping on One Week is no longer in the band. They had a falling out with the other guy. This is how big of a fan I am. I don't know any of their names.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. Full disclosure, I went to the Bare Naked Ladies concert to see Ben Folds Five. So
was it Ben Folds Five or was it just Ben Folds?
It was Five. Yeah,
honestly, that's another great idea. Ben Folds would be a great.
Yeah, now that I'm saying it, I would do that. Maybe even over Billy Joel. With Ben Folds, it's tricky though because there's so many good ones with the band and so many good ones without.
There's nothing like, that's really rocking though. Like I don't know. Like, am I really gonna be like, give me my money back? Like, you know.
Rock in the Suburbs
is like the one
banger. You're right. They could do a Ben Folds.
Madonna. Maybe she has one.
Yeah. That's a good question. Feels like she could,
you know, actually maybe I would just do like a Divas machine. You know, you could do like Madonna, Cher, Donna Summers, like just like a super group pinball machine.
And there's nothing that says it has to be someone from like 40 years ago. We could have a Tay-Tay machine.
Talks to me. I laugh because it's just so funny.
Okay. What I again say,
I think the overlap is
where are the bangers?
Ooh, hot take. Yeah,
the hottest take of all time is I thought her earliest stuff is her best.
I'm not gonna fight you on that.
You don't want to, you just don't want to, you're going to let me take any and all heat that may come from that.
I feel like by not defending the later albums, I'm already like canceling myself online. I'll go on record. I kind of like Country Taylor.
Yeah. I mean, I also really like Shake It Off Taylor. Like,
sure,
you know,
sure.
I take it back. There are a number of bangers that could like be on a Taylor Swift machine.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Sorry. We were talking about theme for Rush though. And I think the important part of that is that for me, this is decidedly average. This is like a 3 out of 5. Like I'm not a super fan. It's not pulling me anywhere that I wasn't already.
I think I'm a bit more of a Rush fan than you. I give it a 4 out of 5. And probably that extra point came from one of my favorite little attention to detail things. You know how a lot of pinball games will have like a mystery scoop, and mystery is just kind of like the generic way to say that. Do you remember what the Rush one is called?
No, I don't remember what it was called.
It's called Roll the Bones.
Oh, that's right.
Which is an album.
Yes.
Of Rush's. And
I thought
that was just so fun.
Yes. So fun. So oh, that is a good call.
Bonus point for Roll the Bones, 4 out of 5.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for shouting that out. I forgot. Yeah. I was so hyped on the fact that like the this does not impact our final score standings. The bartender gave me a pro tip on the don't hit the flipper when it comes out of the scoop. It'll go to the left flipper and you've got a perfect shot.
Oh. And I think that explains the results.
Yeah. And I was so caught on that. All right. So the fun factor, I really don't have a lot to say that we haven't already said through sort of game design and theming. I think there is top to bottom a lot of care put in this machine that it is satisfying to play, and nothing felt, none of the modes that we played, none of the shots, nothing felt unfair. And I felt like if I had another, you know, day with the machine, I would just see my scores continue to climb, because it felt like it really was based on your ability to feel out the machine in a way that I don't see in a lot of others.
Okay. And so is that what's fun for you then?
Yeah. I thought everything was super satisfying, and I thought it in a fair way. And I had a really good time with that.
Yeah. I think for me, part of it is my experience with the machine. I just never got into a flow. Another part of it is me feeling like it just felt kind of samey and generic to other machines. So I gave it kind of a middle score, 3.5.
Three and a half?
3.5.
Wow. I gave it a 4. I thought it was a lot of fun. I would happily go back to it. The theme, I don't think, is keeping me hanging around, but the gameplay loop is bringing me back.
Yeah, I could see myself getting into it.
All right. So as is tradition, after we play a few games to get our notes in place, we then get serious. We play 3 games against each other, and we use 3 to sort of even out noise, just bad games, bad luck, to see how we stack up. We're not going to win anything anywhere with these scores, but it is just sort of a nice thing to do. My best game was my first game. I was riding high. I scored 67,803,340.
Yeah, I was about half that on my best game, 31 million.
So. Oh, I wanted to say my worst game was better than that, but that's not true.
Okay, well, at least I got that going for me. Yeah, I did never get into the flow, but next time.
You know, it's fair. And next time, you know, maybe we'll...
Next time, maybe we'll play the Taylor Swift machine.
I was going to say Bare Naked Ladies, but we'll have to wait at least 1 week for that.